Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
Hello?
To the rap, hip-hop.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this episode of the Child Support Hustle Show, we're joined by Edmund Welch, who is the founder of Disgusted Dads. Disgusted Dads is a symbol and platform representing the common cause of all dads. They call attention to the practices and policies that inhibit and disenfranchise fathers and representing the common cause of all dads. Disgusted Dads ask that you continue to support and encourage the fight for family law reform. Please share awareness of this critical social issue. Disgusted Dads is but one of many organizations and companies dedicated to the fight for fathers' rights. We salute and offer strength to those feeling isolated and failed by a system entrusted with the well-being of our family. Good evening, Mr. Welch. How's it going?
How are you? It's so much of a pleasure to be here. I'm sorry I was a bit late, but I made it on time.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on the show, man. Tell us a little bit more that I didn't cover, or something you want to say about your organization, Disgusted Dads.
You covered it brilliantly. Thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words. We're a startup group. I'm not an experienced or expert businessman or salesman. I'm an average guy. I had a child born to me, and because of circumstances with the mother, I walked in the family court seeking some help and assistance and some guidance. And for the last 6 years, I've just been trampled on by the corruption in the family court.
Yeah, and it's getting out of, you know, it's getting out of hand. But I'm glad it's a lot of organizations. We're starting to work together. We're starting to coordinate a little bit. And we're starting to bring attention to some of these things that's going on. It's very egregious, and it seems like they're picking people to make permanent economic slaves out of for something that's just feeding the system. They don't care about the kids. Every time I hear an organization, DHR, Child Protective Services, anytime they say that crap about it's all about the kids, that's a lie. It's not about the kids. It's about Title IV defunding and their retirement fund. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, and, you know, I love my country. You know, I'm privileged to be born in the United States. But if we're honest with ourselves as citizens, family court has become the major industry in this country. I mean, we don't have anything else. And so, as a means of, I call it social engineering, you know, they try to, I consider it control, you know, manipulate the population, but it's like everything else has gone too long unchecked with no oversight, and now it has become corrupted.
Yeah, it's corrupted. What I can't get is, like I said, here in Alabama, I've read some stories in New York, especially about, you're probably familiar with Dr. Carlos. He's been a guest on the show before.
Yes.
But
yes.
And I've heard some terrible stories, especially coming out of Michigan with Carnell Alexander. And it's just so many stories that just go on and on and on. And we had a story here in Alabama in Shelby County where DHR, a young girl, 14 years old, got pregnant. They pressured her, tried to get an abortion. She didn't get the abortion, but they still finagled a way to take that child. And they took the child. Then they end up putting the girl in foster care. I mean, it's just ruthless.
The mother.
Every time they take a child, whenever they take a child, that's $15,000 right there, right off the top. That their organization gets. It's all about the money. It has nothing to do with our kids. And I try to talk to a lot of people. You know, this affects all cultures. But since, you know, I do a lot of grassroots works in the African American community, I'm trying to talk people into working out things within themselves because, I mean, they're doing nothing but fostering. They're doing nothing but fostering tension, hate, and destroying kids mentally, spiritually, and socially by this court system. I mean, that's how they operate. They operate on confusion, and they operate on this tension.
Yes, yes. I mean, we're well aware. We were all kind of stories about puppy mills and chicken farms and, you know, the meat industry, but nobody takes a look and sees how familiar family court is to all of these other immoral activities or you know, industry, you know, but it conducts itself in the same way.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, I seen on one page, it was on Pro Se Alliance. That's another Facebook group you should check out, and my listeners need to check out. They're showing how you can you can't sue the state, but you can. There's a way that you can sue the custodial parent, the caseworker, or the judge in your case. You know, if you feel like you've been alienated and they've used the system towards you, you know, file a federal charge, file it in federal court, because a lot of people don't know. They think they're stuck because they go to county court in the county where the child was born. But you, child support falls under the Social Security, so it's a federal recovery, welfare recovery program. So when you, if you have a problem with them, try to file a case in federal court where it comes from. Just don't think you're stuck with the locals, because the locals are the most greediest
right.
ones.
Well, that's the thing about American law. And, you know, most the average citizen, most of us, we really don't, we haven't gotten past traffic court, much less to now want to deal with the federal courts, you know. We sort of get used to the state environment because, you know, we're in and out of it so much because so many different circumstances of our life. But we actually just move through it like we're in a canoe, you know, and hope to get out of it quickly. Now, to tell people that they have to sit back and learn the legal system is too much to bear. It's too much of a burden for most to even consider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but there are avenues in the federal court. I mean, for each, whether it's something simple as a Article 78 or a civil rights action. But we're laymen. We have no expertise and no knowledge in law, and the higher up depends on that.
Yeah,
you know?
And we. And thank God for organizations like yours and the Child Support Hustle that we're trying to do, you know, everything we can to educate people on different avenues they can take, and just letting them know that there are a group of people that's addressing this issue and talking about it. I know you said you're a startup organization, but you're doing pretty good. I mean, you got a lot of people tuning in to you. You know, you got at least 40,000 tuning in to you. So, you know, and we got other organizations. I think Child Support Hustle recently reached about 100,000 or something like that. But it may be a little bit more. But we need to start combining and doing more talking about this issue, because it's going to affect kids. And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand. Whenever you involve the state, can't no good become out of it. And I even told a child support caseworker this. I haven't heard a success story out of DHR. There is no one. If somebody
exactly.
knows, and I'm gonna repeat this again on the show like I always do. If you know a success story in DHR, tell me about it. There are no success stories. Either that people are always damaged. You know, sometimes the custodial becomes bitter, and then sometimes the non-custodial becomes beaten down, and then sometimes the child gets emotionally and socially damaged. One of those three is going to happen, and sometimes all three of those things happen.
Right. Well, that's
so
the reverse psychology of the belief that going into family court will provide some sort of resolution. Family court is a business, and like all businesses, its first loyalty is to itself. So if it actually resolves issues, it would put itself out of purpose.
yeah. And I had heard this book. Have you heard of this book called Friend of the Court, Enemy of the Family?
I believe I have heard that title. Yes.
Yeah, and this was came from an insider. You know, she was on the inside. And she talked about how they were encouraged not to tell the non-custodial ways and anything that could help them, because that's where the book came from. She tried to help people on both sides, and reunification of the family is not a stated goal of the family court when you get to dealing with DHR. So why would a person want to deal with an entity, the state, whose goal is to have you at each other's throat at your child's expense? I just don't get why any parent would want to do that, because even I know a lot of people, you know, when these relationships end, one custodial, and I want to make it clear, in 9 times out of 10, it's the female that's going to get custody, 9 times out of 10, and there's a wealth in custody. But on another note, I know quite a few females who maybe they have gotten, you know, something like a chemical endangerment. They might have slipped up and done something, you know, and got their child taken, and the guy did the same thing to them. It's a system, but it impacts more of males. They get the impact of it. It's called gender discrimination in my book.
Yes.
So
let me see. Like you said earlier, and we used to, take example, for example, you hear the stories in criminal court of people who are wrongly convicted. And then you find out how sometime later that the DA had evidence that could have cleared them. And that's called exculpatory evidence. Now, just like in a criminal matter, the police will never submit evidence that clears a person under arrest. And it's like that in family court. They will never put forth the most viable resolution to end the conflict within the family, because then as long as the conflict continues, one or more members of the family will be required some sort of third-party services. And that's where the lobbyists have taken control of family court to farm us out to these organizations outside of family court that provide services.
Yeah, they just, like the prison industrial complex, they just, their goal now is to feed this monster they've created. They saw some money, it could be made off of it. Now they have to feed this machine, and they do that at the expense. And it's just so unfair, because look at what the custodial parent gets. I mean, they get free housing, free food, tax breaks, and they also get a state-funded lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it encourages single motherhood. It encourages you not to have a man, just like the projects did people, the African Americans, when they came with this project concept. You know, you can live in the projects, but you can't have no man there. You know, they don't want a relationship to be formed at all. They want to keep the family unit broken, because they make money off of a broken family unit.
Well, when you look at it, as you said, it's the gender bias in the whole thing.
Yes.
The women,
yes, it is.
You know, we have the Violence Against Women Act. You have Title D is for security. And they encourage the women to not just seek, and this is not, you know, I'm fully in support of women who need help to get that help. I believe they should be protected against, injustices and assaults and crime. But
yes,
they've programmed a segment of our women to turn family court into a livelihood, into a career.
Yeah.
Not to look at it as a means of escape from a problem, but as a means of advancement in life. You know, they talk about the teen pregnancies in the project. They talk about these young mothers, but then they're not teaching the young mothers the responsibilities of pregnancy. They're teaching them that if they get pregnant, all they need to go apply for services.
Yeah.
And if they go and get a family court order or order of protection, they get expedited in these applications. So you got a 14-year-old woman or young woman who is trying to figure out what is she going to do for the next 5 years, and the first thing that's going to come to her mind is, well, if I have a baby, I'll definitely get a house, I'll get furniture, I'll get food, I'll get clothes.
And think about, you know, and think about these young women who may have some rebellious issues with their parents, and they want to get out. All they got to do is have a baby. And we know teenagers go through. Yeah. But see, there's no study. See, the government's not going to do any studies on that. They don't want to see that.
Well,
they just want
to
make a
life. All they have to do is look at the filings and petitions of family court. You know, when they congratulate themselves and, you know, give these town halls and these budget, publications, they always talk about what they did in response to a woman's need or to a community's need, but then they refuse to reveal what participation they had in creating that need in the first place.
Yeah. They're just enablers of this culture, and they're just passing it down from one generation to another.
Yeah.
They're passing it down
yeah.
from one generation to another.
Long-term business. I mean, that's what
yeah.
the product, you know, businesses, they try to make a product that lasts for generations. They want to be able to you know, move like Johnson & Johnson. They want to be around like cornflakes.
Yeah.
So, that's what they
yeah,
turned us into.
Yeah. Let me ask you this right here, because I had an experience with this. It wasn't harassment, but I think that they may have wanted to lay the foundation down on it, but I nipped that in the bud. I went to court, and for the first 20 minutes, you know, we wasn't even talking about the case. The first thing the caseworker told me was, I seen your blog. I listened to your show. I was like, okay. You know, she said, well, I think you're misinformed. You're misinforming your listeners. And, man, that got me upset. Man, I pointed at that lady. I said, look, let me tell you something. I said, I'm not misinformed. I have lived this, and I have studied this for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me I'm misinformed. And she
mm-hmm.
she actually act like she didn't know what Title IV defunding was.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
you know,
yep.
and I told her, I said, let's just end this conversation, because if you're going to tell me you don't know what Title IV defunding is, then I know where you're coming from.
Well, I went through the same thing. I started discussing that because of a smart remark made to me in family court. And, you know, because my ex, she's been leveling allegations against me since my son was born. So the court suggested that I live in New York City. We have corner stores on every corner. And they cracked a joke and said that I was, you know, let me back up for a minute. I was complaining about why I had to keep responding to so many allegations without any investigation. And, you know, I was upset at how long she could do this. So they told me, well, what I should do is make sure that I walk into the store in my neighborhood three times a day. That way there will always be some sort of video recording of where I was in case of another allegation from her. And, you know, I joked, you know, I laughed with it in court. But I came home that night and I got pissed off. I was like, wait a minute, that was some slick shit they told me.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
So I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'll sit online. And they'll know where I'm at because they can just look at the timing of my posting. And I'll post all day long so they know I'm in the house every day long.
Yeah.
So that's how the guys got started. Now, since then, like you, I went to court, and it's been having had my son in my home because of the allegation.
Mm-hmm.
My ex said that I sexually abused him and had assaulted her with a pipe. The investigation from that accusation was completed in 4 months. She did it November of 2014. All investigations were completed inside of 4 or 5 months. But I haven't seen my son here in my home for the last year because they keep telling me in court that my judgment is in question because of disgusted dad. Because of the things that
yeah.
I post on Disgusted Dad.
See, that's an infringement on your freedom of speech. See, they need to be sued for violation of your freedom of speech and expression.
Right. Well, the judge in the case always seems to be bewildered by it. You know, but it's the lawyers who spend so much of the allotted court time attacking and speaking about, you know, irrelevant matters that, by the time, you know, I was 10 minutes or whatever is up, the judge just makes a final decision and doesn't necessarily put any restrictions on Disgusted Dad. But, you know, I leave out of court realizing that, wait a minute, I haven't seen my son because they said I gave him an STD, but we didn't talk about this today. We talked about what I posted on the Best of Dad. So I got to come back in 3 months and hope that we finally get through it.
And see, that's another thing that they do, too. When you're dealing with family court and you're dealing with DHR, they always do their best to try to pin some type of allegation on the non-custodian. You know, if they can, and to them, it's a win-win. If they can get Title IV defunding off of your child, and they can keep bringing you to court, trying to break you down, and they can, you know, if they can attack you and keep you weak, you know, that's their main goal, to keep you going on all these different fronts where you can't fight back. Like I said, anytime, and in Alabama, I know in Alabama, I know in some of these counties, if you ever use, because you, when you go to court, I tell people, when you go to court for contempt, you ask for a lawyer to prove that you are not in contempt because you do not have the ability to pay, and you want a lawyer to prove that you don't have the ability to pay. In a lot of counties in Alabama, they only let you use that one time in your whole entire case, in the whole 18 years or whatever. You can only do that once. But if you go into court, you have the right to be represented every time you step in there.
Right.
But they don't do it here. They don't do it here in Alabama. They're going to make you pay out of your own pocket, you know.
Well, the thing about putting some sort of blame on the non-custodian is it goes back to the whole operation. The answer to why is always because. So why these things exist, or, you know, why something has to be done, there has to be a because. So that's where the non-custodial, and most always the man, always has to be found and fault for something. You know, and I try to tell guys this.
And even if it's not proven, they'll use just the accusation against you, even if it's not proven. See, that part, they just violate the Constitution at every turn.
Well, this is why I explain to the gentleman, especially, you know, it starts with the accusation, and they string you along and they wear you out so much that most times a father who hasn't done anything will plead guilty to a lesser charge or to a violation just to get the matter over with. But he doesn't know that they don't really care what you're pleading guilty to. They just want you to sign guilty, because the guilty plea now then justifies everything else that happened.
Exactly. And the woman don't have to deal with you. She don't have to come through with her obligations. They'll use that against you for the whole entire 18 years and then alienate your child against you.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
And that's another big thing, too, the alienation that goes on. The court supports that. And you can't go into a court and talk about your visitation. When you go to court, the only thing they want to know is about the money. That's all they want to talk about. And my problem is, if it's all about the child, then anytime we go to court, any damn thing ought to be on the table. But they don't do that. What they'll do is make you go back and spend money. If you want to talk about visitation, then you got to go get a lawyer. You got to file this. You got to pay this. And in the meantime, they're either garnishing your check. They're doing something to try to break you down financially. But if you want some defense, you got to come out of your own pocket. Meanwhile, the custodial parent, the woman is sitting there. She's getting all these government checks and all these government benefits and a free lawyer. But if you want to fight back, you got to go get your own.
Well, let me ask you something about the benefits, right? In any other circumstance or story, let's talk about if it's you slash the pocketbook or if you know, Wall Street execs embezzling money. There's that element of restitution.
Uh-huh.
Right? In all crimes, in all courts, if there's a finding of a falseness, you know, the one who made whatever false benefit usually has to give back something. In family court, they're not going to require your women to give up the houses, to give up the welfare, you know, to give up the food stamps.
Yeah.
You know, they can't tell them to regurgitate, you know, the food that they ate. You know, they can't get nothing back. So it has to continue sort of like a one-way thing. So the women have to always be justified. They always have to be. I mean, in my particular case, I guess, because I have she's gotten 5 different apartments in the last 6 years. Now, you know, just imagine how much the cost was and you know, the benefits and costs that she derived from that. Now, to find her.
Moving, deposits.
Now, to have her pay restitution on that is basically impossible. They can't find her guilty of falsifying documents, and then request her to pay restitution as part of a sentence. They can't. So it's better just to keep even if I'm and I've never been found guilty of anything.
Yeah, you got to fund her. They want you to continue to fund the custodial parents' lifestyle.
Right. In the bigger scheme of things, when you look at our society, right, our society tells women that they can sell sex, they can promote sex, they can give sex without being responsible for it.
Exactly.
And so you have a lot of what I call free roaming vaginas breeding at will.
Yeah.
And our economy is not prepared for that. Our economy does not have, even if all of these women wanted to work 9 to 5 to support the children that they give birth to, our economy could not sustain them. We don't have enough jobs available for them. We don't have enough business available.
No, and I tell people, I've been working on this bill I'm getting ready to come out with, and it's called the Equal Partners in Conception. See, that's where they fuck us at. Yeah, that's where they fuck us at, Equal Partners in Conception, because as soon as a woman get pregnant, all of a sudden she's got all the rights. A woman can go and abort that baby if she wants to. A man can't do nothing about it. She did not create that baby by herself, but her alone can go and decide to kill it. Now, what kind of justice is that? That is not equal justice. And under my bill, if a woman becomes pregnant and she don't want the child, she has to notify before she gets an abortion. They have to get it in writing from the father, and there's penalties if she lies, if she gets another man to come in and say, no, I want it, she had an abortion. But she has to notify the father, and he has a chance to have that child. And vice versa. If she gets pregnant, if she's got the right to end that birth, which is not to be a mother, he should also have the right to say, no, I don't want to be a father. I just, we met and we got drunk and she got pregnant. She got pregnant, but we ain't got nothing together. But like I said, there's no equality in the conception process. They act like it's all about the woman. The man has no rights beyond paying for it. That's it. You know, she didn't create the baby herself.
Well, you can imagine what kind of uproar that will cause in amongst all society. Because then to implement that, again, you would have to hold women more responsible for their actions and for the information that they provide. Because to tell, you know, that means a woman would have to reveal her sexual habits and partners from the moment she is found to be pregnant. And they're not going to do that.
But the main thing about that is we need to, you know, they're not going to want to do that. But in the interest of equal justice, I am, as a man, I am co-creator of that life. And if I am co-creator of that life, I don't think the other person should be able to end that life without my consent.
Of course.
And see, that's where we get into the gender discrimination. That's gender discrimination all the way. If they don't give a man a right about that, that's just gender discrimination.
Well,
hey, tell our listeners how. No, go ahead.
Sorry. Years ago, I mean, our society used to live by a moral code that didn't make all of these written rules necessary, because a man and a woman came together, and, you know, women were more precious, would have themselves more precious, where, you know, if a woman was pregnant, you know, it didn't have to be a guess as to who was the father, because she carried herself and only told one man, you know what I mean? But today, where you have, and I say this with some expert knowledge in this, when you have women who can be strippers at night, escorts at night, but then teachers during the day, you know what I mean? Or doctors during the day, but, you know, pole experts at night, then there's no accountability between the two anymore.
No. And the main reason why they do it is, like I said, it's for the Title IV defunding, and it's also you have politicians not willing to look at it, because you look at voting. Women control the voting. They vote more than anybody. So you're going to have these politicians out here trying to pass all the bills they can and be as tough as they can on the non-custodial, the men. They're going to be as tough as they can to show that, hey, we're looking out for you. But really, they're cowards. You know, I mean, these people, you talk about disgusted dads, these people are disgusting. I mean, when you look at these people willing to tear up these families all because they want to make a dollar, they don't care about these kids. They want to come in and promote this type of friction between two parents and destroy a child in the process just so they can collect matching funding. It's all about that matching funding.
When it comes to the higher-ups and the politicians, the men in government who promote this, I look at them that, you know, if they don't come to work and place the votes that as they're required to, they got to go home and deal with those angry women that they live with. Because if you ever pay attention to a politician's wife, she's always involved in some sort of social organization that's getting fed from the same government that her husband is appointed to work for.
Yeah, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can help your group, and tell them
on Facebook, Disgusted Dads. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. We have disgustedads.com, but that isn't quite up and running yet. We're trying to find some help and assistance in getting that together. We started a GoFundMe campaign. And I'd like to let everybody know that this is not, for me, my personal, you know, legal finances. I'm handling my finances by my personal matter. But what I do need help with is in growing Disgusted Dads. I see what's missing. I see the niche that we could fill. We're not immediately focused on, you know, cutting the head off of this monster. But we want to encourage the community. We want to encourage fathers, the non-custodial parents, all of the sufferers of family court. And so we need that help to travel. We need that help for promotional items. We do notice that media, they're one-sided in promoting this issue. So we're hoping that we can produce and manufacture our own print material, our own shirts and banners, our social media. You know, these are the things that we're trying to get assistance with from the GoFundMe campaign.
Okay. All right. So y'all check Edmund Welch out, who's the founder of Disgusted Dads. Like he said, they're on Facebook. And so do your research, people. Stay informed. And with that, I'm going to wrap this show up with, I want you to stick around and listen to this right here. This is Carol Rhodes, who wrote the book friend of the court, enemy of the family. And I'm definitely going to have you back on again. So I'll be in touch with you. We're going to work that out. We need to start having you back on a regular basis if you have the time.
Oh, definitely. Oh, to you, Marcus, and you, Kenneth, I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for inviting me. I hope I've presented the cause well enough to the audience so they understand that we need to serve our kids, our family.
Yeah, and they need to know about the different organizations out there that's offering help and fellowship about what's going on. But
yeah,
I'll be in touch with you. And,
all over.
Yeah, I want you to listen to this right here. Here's Carol Rhodes.
Okay.
To the children and families. It's a pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Ms. Carol Rhodes.
Thank you. My purpose today is not to dazzle you with my oratorical brilliance and skills. I merely want to say that I came to the 37th Circuit Family Court to make a difference. I was well qualified and hoped to be able to help Michigan families of divorce and separation, but early on I realized that the system was not designed to be child-friendly. No friendship nor honest conciliation were ever allowed in the family justice system between caseworkers and clients. It was all about money. How to get the federal and state tax dollars that were allotted each case for enforcement. In fact, our director would say regularly, we aren't the friend of the family, we're the friend of the court. We stumbled over ourselves trying to get more Title IV-D cases on our records and to increase the child support orders because the federal government granted huge allotments for each case we enforced. In the years I worked in the system, I witnessed regular deception to clients that was mandated by office policy. I saw gender bias and discrimination. I saw records destroyed. I saw office policies and rules change from week to week for the profit of the agency. I saw hundreds of pleas for parenting time or enforcement get buried because there is no money in enforcing custody or visitation issues. Increasing the child support money that came into our offices was the goal for each of us. We were rated according to how much money we brought in through asset seizures, income garnishment, court hearings, warrant issue. We wrote the orders and then we enforced them. The judge merely rubber stamped our efforts. My director proudly told me that the Child Support Enforcement Agency was the darling of the circuit court and that we actually made money for the judge and the court. Unlike the sheriff's department and so many others, our county or state was not an exception to the rule. We were one of the most successful counties and we shared training with other counties and states so they could learn how to maximize their efforts toward increased collection. We were not only told to withhold information, forms, policies, laws, and statutes from our clients with questions, but we were forbidden to help them obtain legal relief from unfair situations beyond their control. We were instructed to quickly help those who were demanding increases in child support, but we were threatened with losing our jobs if we should breathe a word to encourage an injured or unemployed payer to petition for a reduction of any kind. For the years that I worked in the system, I put my job on the line whenever I helped any of the parties in trouble. We were not to get personally involved. The children or parents, we had nothing to do with that. I was derisively accused of wasting my time being a social worker. We worked closely with Child Protective Services and Family Independence Agencies, and they were the same way. No one wanted to improve services or hear about abuses within the system because every worker in these huge bureaucracies is trying to keep his or her job by covering up any errors or problems. I had six secretaries underneath me, unlimited power in my 401k and my office to lose if I should rock the boat. But rock the boat I did when I wrote the book Friend of the Court, Enemy of the Family. Families that were bleeding from the pain of divorce and separation were insulted, tricked, lied to, and deceived by persons without adequate training to be making those kind of judgment calls. Most of the custody determinations were made by unwed, childless individuals who were totally unqualified to hold the lives of so many in their hands. The determination